Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Queen Hollywood Darlings, the sisterhood of the traveling tinseltowners, now in its second pop network season. Executive producer Sammy Cohen joins me next. The Daytime Emmy Awards start up in Tinseltown tonight, and our second guest is nominated for Best Original Score in Dramatic Series. His daughter is up for Best Original Song. Both awards get presented tonight. We'll listen to Days of Our Lives composer Dee Brett Nelson next half hour. Also ahead, Unscripted TV gets awarded, our latest classic trivia winner, and big news on new places you can hear this very program starting Monday. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Delighted you're with us this Friday afternoon for the promo about television. 53 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We had some rain earlier today. Now it's gray skies, but it's supposed to be a pretty nice weekend ahead. And we're delighted you are with us for the next hour. Some wonderful guests along the way, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is your voice getting raised and dialing in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway, you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way you're involved is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone on the room. Either way, we will get you involved. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Our first guest of the hour, Sammy Cohen from Hollywood Darling, joins us live from L.A., after this news note. The World of Unscripted Television will get an award ceremony all its own June 4th. That's when the inaugural Impact Awards will happen from the Museum of Flying in Santa Monica, California. Bob Saget will host the event, which at this point does not have a TV home. 6 awards for Unscripted Accomplishment will be given out. The big one, Network of the Year. It has A&E, Bravo, History Channel, Investigation Discovery, or ID, National Geographic, Netflix, and Oxygen in the running. Once again, the first ever Impact Awards live from Santa Monica, California on June 4th. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer of Pop Network series Hollywood Darlings, now in its second season, Sammy Cohen. Hi, Sammy.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Very fine, thank you, on this Friday afternoon. How is season 2 going along so far?
It's wonderful. I can't talk about how much fun we had on this second season of Hollywood Darlings. It's been an absolute pleasure. We have had our second episode of the season aired Wednesday, and we're moving right into 3 next week. It's been just the most wonderful experience.
Guest 2A just joined our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, so welcome aboard. If you have a question or comment, put in the room, or use our phone number, 646-652-2906. This show has really become one of the sleeper shows of the past year, and it's a show that, in a way, is real life, because the 3 stars of the show are people that have grown up together in various ways in the world of television and entertainment, and here they are again, sort of in their own new escapades.
Yeah, so just to recap, in case you're not familiar with the show, any of our listeners, Hollywood Darling stars childhood stars Jodie Sweetin, Christine Lakin, and Beverly Mitchell, who grew up as child actors on 3 very popular shows in the 90s, Jodie Sweetin from Full House, Christine Lakin from Step by Step, and Beverly Mitchell from Seventh Heaven. And in Hollywood Darlings, our pop series, they play these exaggerated versions of themselves and navigate the ups and downs of life in Hollywood now as moms and actors living and working in L.A. And through a series of kind of misadventures, they guide and support one another through crazy situations, relationships, and careers. And to watch these 3, you know, they're really the heart and soul of the show. I've never laughed so much on set and broken so many times, which is just a true testament to how just incredibly talented and funny these women are and how well they play off each other. It's really just a pleasure to work with them and watch these stories unfold on screen.
How did they come together to do this series in the first place?
Well, so the series all started with Jimmy Fox at All3Media. This is his brainchild, his baby. He created the show and brought the team together last season one. And Christine, Beverly, and Jody do know each other. You know, a lot of this is based on their real lives, and they grew up together. They all knew each other just from working and acting and, you know, being in the industry as kids. And so Jimmy pitched the show to them, and they were all on board. They did season one, and then they're back for season two. But it really all started with Jimmy Fox and All3, who had the idea to sort of use this model of an exaggerated reality and then turn it into a, you know, a 30-minute scripted series.
If the name sounds familiar, Jimmy Fox was on our show 2 weeks ago. He's the president of Main Event Media, which is part of All3, and he works on both unscripted and scripted television. We've had him on to talk about the unscripted side of things. He's had several projects on in recent weeks on such networks as ID, Investigation Discovery. And it's nice to hear that he, on the scripted side of things, he does a program like this, which is basically, compared to other things he does, it's pure fun.
Oh yeah, this is such a fun show, and the girls are amazing, and he just had the foresight to kind of bring these super talented women together to create just a really, really fun comedy driven series. Lots of laughs.
For season one, was there anything about the audience reaction that particularly pleased you and them? The stars, or is it something also that surprised them, that sort of came out of left field?
As far as season one, did you say?
Yeah.
So season one, I was brought on board for season two. Season one, I know it was a little bit more of the reality model, and it was a lot of them figuring it out on the day and kind of working through scenes. I think what just really, it's no surprise to me because I know how talented they are, but it's really fun to kind of watch them, even in season two, as we work through these storylines and these scenes, you know, some of the stuff that comes up and comes out and some of the jokes that are made is surprising in just the best way and just takes a complete hilarious turn into a direction that then we just, you know, stay on route with. And it's really fun to kind of play with stuff and have people, guest stars and some of our, even some of our 90s guest stars who pop up throughout the season to sort of improvise and play. And there's a lot of fun little surprises that we find on the day that's really, you know, it really just adds to the flair and the flavor of the show and makes it, you know, that much more special.
Sandy Cohen is the executive producer of Hollywood Darlings. It's Pop Network's popular Wednesday night comedy, now in season two, Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Sammy joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televised. Simon Appleman with you from that other side of the U.S., today known as New York. 53 degrees at the top of the hour there. Delighted you're aboard on Block Talk Radio. We welcome those of you that are also checking us out on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And if you have a question or comment for Sammy, all you have to do is give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, just 218 already in the room. We have some management coming your way Monday on Tomorrow We Televised. First up, the president of Aspect America, which has some new owners as we speak. His name is Manel Abu. We've had him on the show before. We'll find out about what Azteca is up to the rest of this year and beyond. We'll find out also if a series that was announced last year, a controversial drama called The Wall, is going to happen. And then we'll have a former executive at both Discovery Channel and National Geographic Television, Steve Shiffman. For the last 2 years, he's headed his own company as CEO called Cooper Media. 2 years ago, they put together a service called Justice Network that runs as a multicast channel on both cable and broadcast television. And his latest venture, which started a few weeks ago, is called Quest. You might say it is a new human nature, history, all sorts of fun things about the natural world that is now available, again, on cable and broadcast channels. Manuel Booth from Aspect America, Steve Shiffman from Cooper Media, both with us live. They'll take your phone calls and chat room reaction Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Sammy, what did you do before coming aboard with this show, and why did you decide to take on the role?
I've been directing a lot of comedy, a lot of short-form comedy. I work with College Humor a lot. I was just coming off of a series over with Verizon Go 90, and coming on board to do season two of Hollywood Darlings was kind of a no-brainer for me. It's exactly the kind of humor that I love. I like the improvised nature of this sort of scripted format. I love these women. I grew up watching them, which is really a cool thing for me. I grew up in LA. I'm from here originally. And it was really kind of a coming full circle moment. I kind of grew up, watching Step by Step and 7-7 and Full House, and to be able to work with, three of my childhood idols was really an incredible opportunity. And Jimmy Fox, all three in pop, I'm a big fan of them as well. And so for me, it was a no-brainer, and I just had the most fun doing it.
Did you come in seeing the first season, or did you decide, I'm going to come in with an open mind, open eye, the relationship I already have with these three actresses, and let's see how we take this second season?
I watched all of season one. The direction for season two was intended to be a lot more stylized. So to get a feel for, because they are playing these exaggerated versions of themselves, watching season one was really helpful just to kind of reorient myself and get to know the girls and how they developed over season one. Kind of gave me, some good footing to dive into season two. Aesthetically, we really wanted to take this second season and make it look like a 30-minute single-camera comedy, really give it some like a stylized look and feel. We have two episodes, the premiere episode and our finale, that are even more stylized and kind of live outside of the typical Darlings world. The first episode is this flashback to Y2K, the sort of origin story of the three girls and how they became best friends on New Year's Eve of 1999. And our final episode of season two is a take on Big Little Lies, and it's this sort of birthday party gone wrong, whodunit. And so it was helpful for me to watch season one, really get to know the girls and know their personas on screen, and then dive into season two with sort of like a whole fresh look and perspective and figure out how we're going to heighten this and stylize this and really take it up, a lot of levels, both aesthetically and as far as the storylines go, and really pushing them, to just like heighten the comedy as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to your style in approaching the season. But first of all, I let you know, Rick Webb, our very good friend from Philadelphia, wonder what he thought about the NFL draft last night. He is now in our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. So, Rick, thanks for being in. Put your thoughts in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. And either way, we do appreciate you being involved. That's very unusual that you come in and say, okay, you want the first episode to be this, and you want the last episode to be this. So how do you – it's like a sandwich, if you will. Two stylized episodes, and then you have everything else in. So how does that impact how you write the rest of the shows? How the shows are both written and directed?
Well, so the season two as a whole is really stylized in its aesthetic just generally. We kind of have these two specialty episodes. It was really nice to kind of create a look for the whole season two, which you'll kind of see throughout. It stays consistent. The first episode, this flashback to Y2K, it's kind of a nice hybrid of the storyline for that episode. It's the girls having lunch and in running into Marla Sokoloff, who's one of our guest stars, it prompts them to remember and take us back to the sort of conception of their best friendship. And so all the flashback stuff is very over-stylized in a way, because it takes us back to 1999. But it is intercut with present-day normal Darlings life. And what's cool about that first episode, I think it's great. If you have or haven't seen season one, it kind of reorients everyone and reminds us why we love this show. We love these girls, these women, and we're reminded of all these like really fun 90s nostalgia moments that we're going to see throughout season two. So what's cool about, even though it's a little bit of a difference as far as, you know, it's kind of a break outside of our normal day-to-day life, Darlings show. It kind of sets us up, and just, you know, it's like chock full of 90s references. We have two great guest stars, Will Friedle and Marla Sokoloff. And it's sort of just, it's also like a nice reminder, like, hey, season two is going to be, like, it's going to look better, and it's a lot more stylized in its aesthetic. And so it's kind of a perfect way to set up season two. Same comedy, you know, the same women, all the funny moments that we've had in season one, but just a little bit, you know, again, more stylized and with a different look and feel. And then our last episode, you know, as far as like where we go throughout the season, everything in between is sort of, you know, typical day-to-day stuff, them getting into all these misadventures. And then the very last episode was fun because that's a total and complete diversion. It's sort of this parody of this take on Big Little Lies. That was a fun one to end on, just because it's so outside of our normal typical world. But it's still, again, kind of the heart and soul of all these episodes. It's still Jody, Beverly, Christine doing their thing. And so it remains kind of consistent tonally. And even when the stories, we have, you know, witches and spells and episodes where we, you know, things get a little bit more ridiculous, I'd say. It's still really grounded in just, you know, Jody, Beverly, Christine's, you know, just we kind of still remain consistent there. So as far as like the storylines go, it was really fun to play with all these different ideas. Yeah, I don't know. I think that answers the question.
Yeah. It seems to me that, Big Little Lies certainly made enough of an impression on you and the rest of your team that you decided to make this last episode a satire on it. Why do you think Big Little Lies did so well? It simply became a zeitgeist affair, won lots of Emmys,
yeah,
won lots of other awards. HBO is going to have a second season either this year or 2019. It was one of those shows, along with The Handmaid's Tale, along with 13 Reasons Why, you can name a few others, that seemed last year to go beyond just being a show. It went to be sort of like a, and maybe even beyond must-see TV. It sort of became like must-live life, sort of this way.
Yeah. I think at the heart of a lot of what you're talking about right now, the heart of Big Little Lies, and very much at the heart of Hollywood Darlings, you know, it's a very female-driven, female-empowered show. I think we really took a liking to it. And in creating the storylines, even before, you know, we started shooting, I think it was sort of a natural fit and a really good way to celebrate a show that we all love in, you know, and do our own comedic take on it. But I think a lot of what we're seeing and what I like about Hollywood Darlings is, you know, I think females in general are underrepresented in comedy, and it was really a great opportunity to, again, kind of celebrate a show that we love that is very female-driven and empowered, and inject our own sense of humor and celebrate it, you know, in a comedic way. And these women are so funny. This show was spearheaded by a lot of really incredible women, a lot of talent, and so for us it was really just a perfect fit and a really fun, you know, we all love the show, and so I think, you know, it's making its mark, and it's amazing to see shows like that inspire other creatives and to kind of watch this grow collectively.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Hollywood Darlings now in its second season on the Pop Network, which is a joint venture of CBS and Lionsgate. The show is on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We've got Sandy Cohen, the executive producer of the show. She's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Have a question or comment for Sandy? Get on the horn now, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday, we're going to come your way 2 hours earlier than normal, special time. It'll be 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. That's because of a special event that Univision is going to be doing here in New York in Central Park, and it's because of Vice, which is having a digital content new front, which we expect will be very interesting in terms of news value. That'll be happening later that Friday afternoon. And if Univision, by the way, does announce anything during the course of their event Friday morning, we'll have it for you as a news note on our program. Plus, YouTube, the night before, will have their annual brand cast. Will they have some interesting announcements to make about upcoming shows, both for YouTube and YouTube Red? We'll find out. Anything breaks from that event Thursday night, which will be a Radio City Music Hall, we'll have it for you Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. And remember that starting next week, we'll be carried live on Spreaker.com and on the Spreaker Podcast Radio app. It's available in iOS and Android format. All you have to do, by the way, if you know people who want to catch us on Spreaker, is this. Tell them to put Tamavi Televised in the search bar, either at Spreaker.com or on the Podcast Radio app. And either way, they'll click and they'll get the show. So it's either Spreaker.com or the Spreaker Podcast Radio app, available in iOS and Android format on PCs, tablets, and smartphones. Just put Tamavi Televised in the search bar either way, and you'll get our show. And again, next Friday, special time, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Because you have three people to play off of in every episode, do you sometimes feel that it might be nice to alter the format a little bit and maybe have one episode focus on one of the threesome or another on another of the threesome? How much do you go with that in season two?
It's been kind of a nice balance all throughout. We, in every episode, sort of have our A and B stories. And it's kind of nice because some episodes, you know, the one of the storylines will feature, say, Beverly and Christine, and then Jody will be off kind of doing her thing. But what remains consistent and what's really, like, at the heart and soul of this show is no matter what whatever story we're telling that episode, the three women kind of coming together no matter what, that's kind of like the spine of everything. Even when they kind of go off, do their own things, and come back together, there's always that sort of like moment with the three of them, and really seeing the three of them play off of each other is like the most magical and quite honestly hilarious part of the show. So we had a nice balance of mixing storylines, and they, you know, two of them would kind of go off on a pair and experience something. There's an episode where Christine and Beverly think they've been cursed, so they go to a witch store to get help from a coven of witches and try to break the curse, or what they think is a curse. Meanwhile, Jody is trying to fix her bad dating karma, so she goes on a date and has her own storyline. But at the end of the day, they come together no matter what, and that's kind of fun. So there's been a nice balance all throughout. The first and last episode, like the Y2K, it's the three of them together from beginning to end, which is really fun. And in Big Little Lies, that was a fun one because they each have their own storyline. It's that sort of whodunit. So this birthday party gone wrong, Jody, Christine, and Beverly all trail off and do their own thing, but then ultimately at the end come back together. And so it's really kind of a fun balance and a really good, you know, just cool way to write and create the show.
Mm-hmm. I talked with Brad Schwartz, the head of Pop, earlier this week when he was in New York, and he had a lot of great things to say about your series. And with the support of Pop, are you already starting to look with your crew about what season three will be like next year or season four and five? How long do you want the show to go? How long do our threesome stars want the show to go?
That's a great question. I mean, we all love this show, and so, you know, we would love to do as many seasons as we could. I think aesthetically and as far as how we've stylized it, I think, you know, looking forward to a season three, four, or five, however long it would be on, I think that would continue to stay consistent, and the hope would be to kind of continue to tell these kind of stories and have you know, our regular format episodes. And it would be nice to have, you know, an episode every season where we do kind of break format and play a little bit even more. And as far as, yeah, future seasons, we're all hoping for more seasons of Darlings. And the beauty of the show is, this sort of, you can watch any episode at any time, and because it's not a serialized show, you can hop around all over the place, and so we get to kind of tell stories, you know, that are unique to themselves, and we'll do that for as many years as they'll have us.
The next episode of Hollywood Darling, starring Christine Locke and Beverly Mitchell, Jodie Sweeting, will be next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on the Pop Network, joint venture between CBS and Lionsgate. Check your local listings for where Pop is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, www.poptv.com. Just exactly how it sounds. www.poptv.com. Hollywood Darling, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Sammy Cullen, executive producer, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on how season 2 is getting off the ground. Hopefully many more to come. It's been a wonderful pleasure having you here.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome. All the best to your cast and crew, and have a sensational weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Sammy Cullen from Hollywood Darling joining us live from Los Angeles. Our latest classic trivia question of the week and answer coming your way shortly, but first some words from our fine folks at Audible.com. And if you're looking for a very unique audiobook to check out this weekend, how about this one from Tyra Banks, America's Next Top Model fame and more. It's called Perfect is Boring, She's Running With Her Mother, and you can check it out with a trial run at audible.com. And all you got to do to get that run is go to this website, audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com from Amazon.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and certainly inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now on Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. Just sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Get one free audio book, 1 month trial of the service, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Won't take long to find out that at Audible, listening is the new reading, and they are out to transform the way you hear the world. So don't forget, for that 1 month trial, free audio book of your choice, audibletrial.com/televised. Now time for our Clap Trivia Question of the Week, and for the second week in a row, we have a winner. It's Michael Fitzgerald of Liverpool, New York. He got the correct answer about 24 hours after we posted on Monday, and he will be winning the wonderful Jane DVD from Natural Graphic with original music by Philip Glass. The question we posed on Monday was this. What was the first television series starring Mickey Rooney? The answer? Actually, there were two. The Mickey Rooney Show and Hey Mulligan. They were on in one show from 1954 to 55 on NBC. Once again, the answer to our question this past week, The Mickey Rooney Show, also known as Hey Mulligan, that was the first television series starring Mickey Rooney, who did quite a few television series along the way in his very long entertainment career. So once again, thank you to Michael Fitzgerald of Liverpool, New York. Your prize, the Jane DVD from National Graphic, already on its way to you. So enjoy, and thank you again for playing. We'll have a new question coming your way on Monday, and our prize, by popular demand, we were able to get another copy of a terrific book that whose author was on our show 2 weeks ago, You Play the Girl, on Playboy Bunny, Stepford Wives, Strength Max, some of the messages by Karina Cucciano. Great essays about her role and how playing the girl shaped her work in television and covering the scene. Trish Connell's You Play the Girl, that'll be our prize next week, right here on Tomorrow We Televised. So listen to the show on Monday, and we hope to welcome those people that are going to be checking us out at our new location, Spreaker.com, the Spreaker Podcast Radio app. We'll post the question on Monday's show. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're from. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win. You Play the Girl. And if you can't catch the question when we pose on Monday, don't worry. I'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook, the following morning on Facebook, and at my Twitter page, that's UBCSimonTWBT. It's UBCSimonTWBT. But remember, no matter how you check it out, in order to win, you got to be in. So play along. And like Michael Fitzgerald did from Liverpool, New York, he got all the very best. This is Tomorrow We Televised. We are the program all about the tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Don't forget, next week, we kick things off in addition to Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network on Spreaker.com and the Spreaker Podcast Radio app. If you know people who enjoy both of those wonderful entertainment forums, let them know what they have to do to get our show live. It's to put Tomorrow We Televised in the search bar when we go on the air, and they will get our show. And we hope by the end of next week to give you yet another place that you can catch our program, and we are very excited about this as well. So hopefully by the end of next week, we'll be able to spring that news for you. When we come back, Daytime Emmy Awards kick off tonight, and our next guest is in the hunt for one of them. In fact, if he gets it, he will be a repeat. And that's not all. His daughter is up in a similar category, also in a repeat performance. Composer from Days of Our Lives on NBC, D. Brent Nelson, joins us live from L.A. after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio in the universe, www.blogtalkradio.com, where there's 25 million listeners around the world every month. Enjoy. It's your home for Saturday Madness. Guess it's on a Friday night, but it's a great request show. Request any music you like. It's all a lot of fun. It happens tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern. That's 8 p.m. Pacific. 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific. Saturday Madness, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best feature available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Incidentally, if you want to catch an interview that we did earlier this month with Jimmy Fox of Main Event Media about the unscripted show he does, don't forget to go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can go to iTunes.com and the Apple TV iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Televised this Friday afternoon of April 2018. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us on this Friday afternoon. 53 degrees at the top of the hour. No more rain, at least for now. Hopefully a very bright weekend ahead. We invite you to join in with our guests coming up this half hour. And if you have a question or comment for that person, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name, Rick Weller, firm in Philadelphia, and guest 218 already in the room. You will find that chat room at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. From time to time in this program, we showcase the world of primetime music. We've had a number of distinguished class of new composers join us over the years, people like Jeff Russo from Fargo, Nathan Barr from The Americans, which is the final season right now on FX, and more recently, Matt Quayle, who won the Emmy Award a year or two ago for his work on Mr. Robot. But for the very first time, we're getting into the world of daytime television. And over the years, there have been a lot of memorable music in that world, whether it's been game show music, like the themes from Tell the Truth, the Pyramid Shows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, from the likes of Robert Covert and Charles Fox and others. There's been wonderful music from the world of daytime drama, talk shows, and so forth. Well, my next guest is up for a Daytime Emmy Award tonight, his second in a row for Best Musical Score for a Daytime Drama. In his case, Days of Our Lives, and he's been involved with that show for many, many years. Of course, that's on NBC weekdays during the lunch hour in most markets around the country. And that's not all. His daughter is also up for a Daytime Emmy tonight for Best Original Song. Joining us live from Los Angeles, one of the key composers of Days of Our Lives on NBC, now 50 years plus and counting, D. Brent Nelson. D. Brent, thanks for being here.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me. Sounds great.
It is a pleasure. It's a pleasure to welcome you also. You're our first daytime composer, by the way, to come on. What's it like for you right now, a few hours before you know whether you're going to be repeating as a winner?
The anxiety's got high. You never know. And I got to tell you, this would be a three-peat for me. If we win tonight, we'd be doing the hat trick.
I would think that the world of daytime music is a very unique breed in the world of television music. Because when you talk about a primetime show, in some cases you compose for a single episode. In many cases now, more than before, you have composers who are doing the score for an entire series run. But when you're talking about daytime dramas, where you have five episodes a week, 1 hour a day, and you have so much scenery and characters and plot to cover, and you've been doing this for years, I would have to think that it's a very unique process, even though it's one of the unique and comprehensive and sometimes complicated processes there are in the world of music scoring.
It's definitely very specialized because we do have a lot of score that we use, and particularly at our show, it's very music-driven, and we have upwards of 22 to 26 minutes of music every single day. So one of the ways we get around that is we build a library. We use, I think we're up to about 3,000 or 4,000 cues right now that we can literally pick from for any given show, so that we're able to actually deliver a daily show with completely different music every day of the week. And we could do that probably for 2 months. That's how much library we have to pull from.
And of those thousands of music cues, how much of that is your handiwork?
Well, I've co-written for the show since 1992, so out of those thousands of cues, I'm 50% on everything with my co-writer and partner, Ken Corday.
Is Ken Corday the barbecue that was one of the creators or one of the key people behind Days of Our Lives when it started in the 60s on NBC?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
I was saying, is Ken Coday, your fellow composer, is he related to Barbara Coday? I believe was one of the creators of Days of Our Lives when it started in the late 60s on NBC.
Yes, Ken Coday's father started the show in 1965, and his mother took over and ran it, I think, up into the early 80s, and Ken has been the executive producer since then, but he's also a musician. He's got a music degree, and he and I have been working in the studio together since the late 80s.
Mm. That's an amazing partnership to go back that long and have that kind of heritage of having one of the executive producers also be your fellow composer in arms.
Yes, it's definitely it's a great situation, and it's great for both of us because I'm also a music director on the show now, and sort of compartmentalize our approaches. Like I know where his strengths are, where his lushness and his romantic styles and his passion for writing things in the vein of Bernard Herrmann, and I let him carry those areas of the drama, and I focus on the things like a lot more of the contemporary, a lot of the film scores that I listen to, and I draw from that for my own repertoire. So we've got sort of different strengths and different areas of music that we are passionate about, and we just kind of blend it together, and because the show has so many different kinds of stories, we're able to integrate all these different styles and create a palette that literally changes from story to story to story. We don't score the same type of show with the same music at all. We actually have quite a bit of diversification between the two of us.
It's interesting how in different genres of daytime television, the music has evolved, both with game shows and with daytime dramas, or some would call the soap opera. In the 1950s and 60s, when all the fun was live, you had live music, whether it was a live organ, a live piano, sometimes a live jazz ensemble. And some of it was very memorable. In the case of soap operas, there was the theme from Search for Tomorrow. There was Paul Kaufman's wonderful fanfare for The Edge of Night, which I still think is one of the best soap opera daytime dramas ever. I grew up on that show. Loved that program. Loved the way it was handled. That theme just continued to grab you when you heard at the beginning or the end of the show. And then in the 60s, you had Robert Covert, who not only came up with great game show music with his work with Bob Stewart and Goodson Todman, but he also created, in a way, the beginnings of the modern way daytime drama music is done. He did Dark Shadows. And it was the first time you had this orchestral score that would pop up all over the place. It could have been done for primetime television, and it was just so good. By the way, Bob is still with us. He's still out, I believe, in his 90s, maybe late 90s. He may still be composing for, he's based in New York. More power to him. God bless him. And I think one of the great innovators and one of the great untold stories, by the way, in the world of television music to do both daytime and primetime. How did you get into – how do you see daytime music evolving? And what led you into doing – to getting into the genre?
I could tell you a little bit about the history of the way the music evolved for our shows because back in the 60s, there literally was a Columbia Television Music Library, and it was orchestral. And there were composers contributing to that library, like Ennio Morricone and Elmer Bernstein literally were writing cues that went into this library that were used on Days of Our Lives way back in the 60s. When the 70s evolved and Ken started writing as a composer, they went to London, and they were using live orchestra in London, and they were writing the score that way. As we got into the 80s, everything became the home studio and the synthesizers and the Oberheims and all the lush strings and that 80s sound, that Jan Hammer kind of approach to television. That became our palette for the kinds of music and the sounds that we got in the 80s. It became all home studio synthesizer based. As we moved into the 90s, as I got more involved with writing and beginning to compose, it was still a lot of home synthesizers, but we started incorporating adding really, really good players from Los Angeles and the areas of woodwinds. And we started adding that live human element back into the score that we would deliver for the show. And as we moved into the early 2000s, we expanded on that with more and more and more live players. And for the last 5 years, we've been going to the regular scoring stage a good 3 to 4 times a year, at least, sometimes more. And we're using the string orchestras of 28 players. So we're kind of the way it was way, way long time ago with live musicians. We're now sort of drawing that back, but we're taking a more modern approach to the way that we're recording, the way that we're writing, and the way that we're using that sound.
Mm-hmm.
So we've come full circle with it in a certain respect.
Yeah. As a music director and a composer, how do you determine each day, like, what the cues are and where you do it? How far in advance do you get to know from the producers and the writers of days, here's the plot, here's the settings, here's where the characters and the plot lines are going, and here's where you want to put music?
Well, there's a couple of approaches to it. One of them is that we're 6 to 7 months ahead as far as story. So when the writers come up with, like, a big major story that's going to take place for 6 months, for 9 months, for a year, we kind of get an inkling of it very early on. And if Ken and I decide we want to do something very special for that particular storyline, you know, we've got a lot of planning that we can do. On a day-to-day basis, our shows are edited probably about 6 weeks in front of air, and we literally would get a blank show. I've got a staff of 2 music supervisors that work with me, and we just address the blank show, and we pick the spots where we want to put music, and we decide what kind of music we want to do. On occasion, and this happened over the Christmas hiatus, we've got a story featuring a character who has a dissociative identity disorder, and this actress, Marcy Miller, is doing a fantastic job. She's playing 3 different people all embodied in the same character. And the big reveal of that story started, I believe it started in February, and I had the show over the Christmas hiatus, and literally scored the entire show top to bottom original, with original music. And the cues that we drew from that particular episode were cues that we used, you know, further on down the road on a daily basis in that particular story.
Yeah, that's a very hard thing to do. It's a natural thing to do for primetime television, but because of the production schedule of daytime, it's very, very rare that you, as we say, score to episode, whereas score to mood or whatever. When you go into the studio with your players to do it, I'm sorry, go ahead. You were saying something.
No, you're right. No, I said it is rare to get something like that to do top to bottom. And it was just because we have, you know, we've got maybe a 2 or 3 week buffer between editing and airtime. And because of the staff that I've got, they can handle certain shows and I can pick certain scenes when it's warranted. In this case, it was a whole show. We had a 5-minute teaser with literally no dialogue. It was just all visuals, and it was just the perfect moment to really be able to dig in and write something musically for it. And fortunately, the timing worked out. I had the time to do it.
Mm-hmm. When you go into the studio with your players to record, how much music gets created out of those sessions?
Well, generally, because we do a thing down here in Hollywood, it's non-union. It's called FICOR, which is a legit non-union session. We're able to kind of do as much as we can. We're not limited to 5 minutes an hour. So at basically a 4-hour session, we might get a good 40 to 45 minutes of underscore out of there that we'll be able to use for the next 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. D. Brent Nelson is the music director and one of the key composers of Days of Our Lives. We're 50 years and counting on NBC. Many of you can find it 12 noon or 1 o'clock Eastern or local time, depending on when your NBC station plays it. Other stations play it other times. And for the 3rd year in a row, his work is up for a Daytime Emmy Award as Best Original Score in a Daytime Drama. And his Daughters, we're about to find out, is also up again for Best Song. We're going to get to that in a moment. The Daytime Emmy Awards, by the way, first round will be tonight in Los Angeles. And the rest of the Daytime Emmys will be presented this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And they will be live from Los Angeles on KNERS TV. It's a service that's available on Apple TV, Roku, and Android TV, smart TV sets with that. And we'll talk more about how you can find it a little bit later on in the interview. If you have a question or comment for D. Brent, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. Coming Monday on Smart Televised, we've got 2 people who run different companies in the world of television. Manuel Abu, the president of Azteca America, which has a brand new ownership of late. We'll talk about where that Spanish language network is going the rest of this year and beyond. And then former Discovery and National Geographic Channel executive Steve Shipman, he's been on the show before, will be back with us. He's chief executive of the Cooper Media, the folks behind the Justice Network. It's a multicast service running about cable and broadcast channels around the country. And his latest work is called Quest. It's a natural adventure science history service that's available on cable systems, and on broadcast stations on the digital subcarrier belonging to Tegna and also Univision. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now, your daughter is also up for a Daytime Emmy for Best Song. And I had a chance to hear the song before we started. It's a nice folk song, and it's also heard multiple times around. Tell us how about your daughter and how she decided to join you in doing music for the series.
Well, my daughter Genesee has, let's say she's 26 now, but she's always been a little songwriter, a little folksy, kind of an indie sound songwriter. Since she was 16, 17 years old. She wrote a lot of songs back then, and then she left for New York and went to college. And all of a sudden, writer Josh Griffith developed a character for Days of Our Lives, who was a young, personable singer-songwriter, and we needed to have some original songs for her to sing on camera. And Genesee's songs were the perfect match. It was just serendipity. It was just like I had them, and here was an opportunity to use them. And I had her meet with Olivia, and they started, working together, and Olivia would sing her songs, and it was absolutely working. So that's what we started doing, was producing the songs like that. And as the story evolved, I would give Genesee some outlines to read, and she would write the songs that would fit the scenes. And she, she needed very little input from me. She's just a natural at it.
Mm-hmm. How do you determine when a song is called for, either for a character or a particular ambiance or plot line? And talk about the song she's up for tonight, because I had a chance to hear it. It's a really beautiful song.
Well, the song that she's up for tonight, all the songs that Genesee wrote for Olivia, for her character Claire, were songs that were performed live on camera. Because as a singer-songwriter, Claire would be performing, at the prom. She'd be performing at the memorial, which is like the song that's up for tonight. She's performing at a candlelight vigil for her boyfriend who is in the hospital. So we needed a song that was emotive and spoke to the scene and the sadness of what was happening. And Genesee came up with a song, and I did the pre-record with Olivia. And we don't record live when we work at the show. We always work with pre-records. So all of the songs that Genesee has written for this particular character was because the character was singing live. There is an exception, and it happened in January. It's like there was sort of an Act 7 kind of a montage, a summation of him packing his bags and leaving for rehab. And again, she wrote a song, and Olivia sang it, but we didn't have to sing it live. We performed it over like an edited version of the act.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that people like Elmer Bernstein did write for Daytime. As far as I've heard that Elmer Bernstein did write for Daytime, I know he wrote for David Wolper on documentaries and things like that. And it's interesting how over the years we've had some wonderful composers do work for television, like Robert Covert, like Joe Raposo in the era of children's television, Sesame Street, all those great songs. Barry DeVorzon, who wrote the theme for The Young and the Restless, which people still hear 45 years later. It's still one of the great scenes of daytime television, a phenomenon. How do composers like yourself try to get more attention to the scores that you do? Do you come out with soundtrack albums? Do you find ways in terms of trying to encourage more people to hear the music that you and other folks in your position do?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's kind of a tricky one, because ultimately, if you're doing your job right, people aren't noticing the score. They're just excited about watching the show, and they're drawn into the show, and the show is more emotional, and the audience is more engaged. And sometimes there's a takeaway. They were like, oh, wow, what a great show, what a great scene I've just seen. Oh, and I really liked the music, too. That's it. I mean, that's the job, is to sort of be in the background, but your work is emotive. You're creating a connection that the audience isn't necessarily going, oh, it's because the music is playing, or I like this cue, that's why I like this scene. It's like you're sort of invisible. You're one step behind everything that's going on. So, we do put out a couple of soundtrack albums here and there. I definitely have some folks that write me that want to hear more of just the incidental music that we do, and I usually provide it. I put a lot of it on my website in that regard. But for me as a writer, when I'm working on something and the scene works and it's happening. That's it for me. That's what makes, that's what, you know, hits the button.
Mm-hmm. What inspires the kind of music that you do for certain scenes? There was a 2-minute spot I heard you that I got provided by your publicist that reminded me of all sorts of things. It was very angular, very jagged. It used everything from like xylophones to percussion to straight scoring. Something reminded me of I think episode of the show Tour of Duty, but Joseph Conlon, who wrote the wonderful score for that show, had use of like xylophones and very oriental music to sort of come up with the flavor of, it was a Vietnam War drama of people dealing with the day-to-day, you know, being soldiers in Vietnam. And I just thought that that particular piece had a lot of different elements to it. I'm just wondering what inspires you to write certain types of music for days.
Some of that music and a lot of the music that we've done and a lot of the music that actually has won Emmys for it has been composed to picture. I think that one piece you're talking about in particular was a fight scene. It was a very long fight scene that ended up in a shooting. And it was just having the picture in front of me, which for me is a great collaborator, because you can't just go off and write whatever you want or whatever you think about. You've got to write something that literally fits the moment. And by doing that, it gives you places where you can breathe and pause and be more, have more flourishes when there's no dialogue. And it's very, that's where that music came from. It was just working on the fight. And the percussion parts that are in there, I've got a lot of percussion tracks and live things that I cut in and that I could work around it and just kind of build it. But the scene itself was the impetus for that cue.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of your role models in the world of TV composing? People that you idolize or that you fashion yourself after or that inspire the kind of music you do?
Well, I don't know if I necessarily try to model these people, but there's a lot of, like, Sean Callery's Homeland Score, to me. I mean, that's just, I'm in awe every time I listen to that show. How does he do that? How does he come up with that? It's so cool for me to watch that. And, of course, he came out at 24, which was another one of those shows. You just go, how do they do this every week? It's amazing. And that's really inspiring. I mean, shows even like Bates Motel, Chris Bacon, the whole show was completely orchestral strings. There was no synthesizer at all. It was completely live. It was so emotional. It was emotive. It was just wonderful. Those kinds of things excite me when I see other composers doing that kind of work. It inspires me to, you know, be better at what I do. And in my world, I'm just trying to find my own voice and to grow in that direction of the things that I'm hearing, the way that I'm working.
Mm-hmm. Sean's been on our program. I really enjoy listening to his music. 24 of his scores. He's a very. I also remember his music from the Star Trek series too. And always great music. Always a pleasure to hear.
Yeah.
It's interesting that we now have this, both in daytime and primetime, we have this wonderful group of composers that have really come out with unique scores. They're sort of unique voices. A Sean Callery, a Jeff Russo for Fargo. I mentioned Matt Quayle, who we've had on the show from Mr. Robot.
Oh, absolutely.
Who has his own
absolutely
way to go. And you see him, he does totally different things on Feud than he does on Mr. Robot. And Nathan Barr, who does his own thing with Hemlock Grove, but and now doing the Americans from the get-go. It's just been great to see this new group of composers really take off and take TV music in some wonderful directions.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's to say, when we hear that kind of work going on, it's just inspiring for you to just keep digging and keep finding your own voice and keep growing in that way. And for me, I also take off a lot on, we listen to a lot of film music. I mean, there's a lot of great film composers that we draw from, you know, Despois, Michael Dana, I think even there was some scores, I don't know, Alberto Iglesias, when he did the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, there were some great moments in there in that soundtrack, you know, where he combined the electronics with the orchestral stuff. I mean, things like, I draw on stuff like that. I'm not trying to emulate it, but it's just like, it gives you ideas of what can be done.
Yeah. And incidentally, before we go, I'm happy you mentioned people like Jan Hammer, and I'll also put down Stuart Copeland as well, because Jan's Miami Vice, Stuart Copeland for the Equalizer, they brought back the whole idea of composers doing a full series, not just one episode or two or a theme or two. They really brought back, like Henry Mancini used to do with Peter Gunn and Mr. Lucky, who would do the entire series, the idea of a composer putting their own vision on the line episode in, episode out. It's really, really great. Days of Our Lives, you can catch it weekdays, afternoons, or mornings, wherever your local NBC station is carrying it. For more details about the show online, go to www.nbc.com. And Dee Brent Nelson is an Emmy nominee, along with his daughter, for Best Original Score and Best Original Song. And that's on the Daytime Emmy Awards tonight. I don't know if it's going to be televised in some way, but I do know that Sunday night, when the other awards are handed out, it will be televised on KNET TV. You can get it on Apple TV, Roku, and on smart TV sets and smart devices that use Android TV as their operating system. If you want more details about that service, you can go online at www.knet.tv. Or, for the complete list of Daytime Emmy Award nominees for both ceremonies tonight and Sunday, www.emmyonline.tv. www.emmyonline.tv. Dee Brent Nelson, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck tonight in your three-peat. Good luck to your daughter tonight in a two-peat at least. And we'd love to have you back on the show anytime you like. And congratulations to you
Absolutely.
And your music folks for making it happen.
Well, thank you so much, Simon. It was great talking to you. Really pleasurable.
Same here, Dee Brent. All the best tonight. Take care.
Thank you. Bye now.
Dee Brent Nelson, music director and composer on Days of Our Lives. Once again, you can catch his work weekdays, either mornings or afternoons, on your local NBC station. Check out and listen to what that station is and what time. Some stations play it at noon or 1 p.m. local time. Some play it later or earlier, depending on the situation. And some play the episode on a replay the following morning or afternoon. Again, for the details, www.nbc.com. Thanks to our guests, Dee Brent Nelson, and, of course, Sammy Cohen from Hollywood Darlings for being with us today, and all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, on Monday, we're going to be joining you not only on Blog Talk Radio and on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, but on Spreaker.com and Spreaker Podcast Radio app. It's available in both iOS and Android formats. In either event, if you know people taking those and want to catch our show, just type what's tomorrow be televised in the search bar in either place, and they will get our show live right away. Coming on the show Monday, the president of the Second America, Manuel Abood, and Cooper Media Chief Executive Officer Steve Shipman behind the multicast channel Justice Network and Quest. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up an episode you missed, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version also on iTunes.com and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you. What do you think about today's program? What are your thoughts about where TV is at, music-wise, and where it's going? So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. However you get with us, we appreciate it because what you say matters. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toth is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Stoddenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of BTR are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com, proud development partner of the New York Television Festival, and an Amazon company that will transform the way you hear the world. For that free audiobook and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televise. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Congratulations in advance to all the Daytime Emmy Award nominees and winners tonight and Sunday. We'll be back with you on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio and iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And don't forget, starting on Monday, Spreaker.com and the Spreaker Podcast Radio app, both for iOS and Android. Whatever you're doing this weekend, please make it safe and make it by far great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.